Oh, yes, we'll come to order. We have President.
President.
Senator Sharp and myself, Chairman Senator Lehman.
We will take up first Senate Bill 151, and then
Senate Bill 150, and if we have time, Senate Bill 134. First item before us is Senate Bill 151. Mr. Easton, if you'd join the table, I do have some questions for you, and if there's anybody in the audience, or we have one person signed up in the teleconference network to provide testimony on Senate Bill 151, ask you some questions, maybe you can, for our benefit, just refresh our memories of where we were last week, and I guess the place to start, you can tell us a little bit about the track record for the incentive program that the state has under 3805-180I. Has that been used, and how successful has that been, and how do you measure it in terms of success, and how does that compare to what we're doing here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a copy of the sales schedule with me this evening because I wasn't anticipating that I would address the committee, but speaking from my memory, which may or may not be as precise as you'd like, it's my recollection that we have awarded approximately $38 million in credits under that provision in the years beginning with leases, I think, that began in the 1979 joint state federal sale in Beaufort Sea. And we've had a number of lease sales since that time in which EICs have been available. The way those have operated in every case is that they are combined when they've been offered with a lease term with a royalty as well as a net profit share. And for example, if a decision is made to issue a 30% EIC, and it would be at that time linked also with a 30% share of a net profit. And similarly, if it's a 40%, it's combined with a 40% net profit. And also, each time we've used it, it's been tailored to the specific sale area so that we try to look at the average cost, if you will, of drilling a well there to determine a representative cost on a per foot basis to offer as the exploration Senate credit. And it's offered as a fixed amount of dollars per foot for the well drilled or a percentage of the cost. And we, as I said, have used that on several different sales using several different combinations of net profit shares and EICs, and we have had, as I recall, as I said, about $38 million in that process.
Okay. While we haven't heard any questions of Mr. Easton, thank you. Do you have anything else that you wanted to share?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm just here this evening if you have questions.
Okay. We'll go to Fairbanks to take testimony from Mr. Hugh Dugan. Can you hear us? And if so, could you please come to the microphone and state your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed with your testimony.
Good evening. My name is Hugh Dugan. I live 359 Slater Street, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701. And I am representing myself as a born and raised Alaskan. Been here for 63 years, and I'm 63 years old. I'm getting tired that I look back in territorial days and whatnot, and they gave our resources away to the canned salmon industry, the timber industry, and the mining industry. Now we're in the oil industry and you're doing the same thing. I'm against Senate Bill 150, 151, and also the duplicate bills that's in the House, which is House Bill 199 and House Bill 200. I see these bills, number one, give the Department of Revenue, the Commissioner, complete control over our resources. I see also that the big oil companies have complete control over the resource of oil in the state of Alaska. It does nothing for really the backbone of the oil industry, which is your independent drillers. I really object to the fact that they have, because of the Exxon Valdez spill, it had nothing to do with exploration and production of oil in Alaska, that they put a $5 million bond on exploration, drilling a well, and $20 million bond if you wanted to put it into a well into operation and cut out the little guy. And I'm one of the little guys that you cut out. Trying to get one of those bonds, we could not even get Lloyd's in London to bond us. So I think you guys have to take some more thinking back up the people of the state of Alaska, not outside entities. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Dugan, for your testimony. We have questions from the committee. Sharp?
No, they're just to say hi, Hugh. I'm glad to see that you're joining the process here, as we are down here every day. So I appreciate your testimony, and I'll look you up next time in town.
I hope to look you up tomorrow. Good. I hope to be flying in down there.
Well, I hope the weather tomorrow is better than today. We had wind and rain, but we've been having a lot of that, so maybe it'll be worn out by tomorrow.
Jim hasn't changed in 63 years that I know.
Well, maybe we should give that part of Alaska away to the canned salmon industry.
I'd love to give it to them, but they won't take it.
We go to Anchorage for testimony from Jerry Booth. Following Mr. Booth will be Al Hastings and David Lampe. If you could be ready to prepare your testimony, that would help expedite the hearing.
For Senate Bill 150, Senator?
We are on Senate Bill 151.
I've signed up for testimony for 150.
No. Okay, well, we'll go to that next. If you'd step aside, I don't know if the same mistake was made up there for Al Hastings, but if so... we're on Senate Bill 151. I'd like the next person I have listed, Al Hastings, and then David Lappy.
Yes, Senator, I also signed up for Senate.
And that's Mr. Hastings?
Yes, this is Al Hastings.
Okay, is Mr. Lappy the same thing?
Mr. Lappy is the same thing.
What about George Finley? I have Keith Tabler.
He signed up for 150 also.
It must be raining and blowing in Anchorage, too. this is what I have. Okay, is there anybody else in Anchorage, or is there anybody in Anchorage who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 151?
No, sir, there doesn't appear to be.
Is there anybody else in Fairbanks who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 151?
No further testimony from Fairbanks. Thank you.
Do we have any other sites on?
No, as far as this.
Is there anybody in Juneau who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 151? Okay, we will not be moving Senate Bill 151 today. We, for lack of a quorum, and we will go next to Senate Bill 150. We will go to Anchorage and try again. Mr. Jerry Booth, if you approach the microphone, state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Gerald Booth, Minister of Energy and Minerals for Cook Inlet Region, Siri, the Alaska Native Regional Corporation in the Cook Inlet area. It's owned by approximately 6,500 Athabascan, Eskimo, and Inuit shareholders. The Siri's principal lines of business are natural resource development, oil and gas, minerals, coal and timber, real estate, oil field services, broadcast, radio, and television. Today, I'd like to focus on the area of gas. Siri owns and manages 24,000 acres of surface estate and 1.6 million acres of subsurface estate in Alaska, and has been active in Alaska's oil and gas industry for over 15 years. Siri and its wholly owned subsidiary, Siri Production Company, holds various royalty working interests in several producing and prospective oil and gas fields on the Kenai Peninsula and Alaska's North Slope. The primary emphasis of Siri's strategy for economic growth is the continued development of its natural resource holdings. Development benefits Siri and businesses throughout the state. have before you today SB 150, which would allow companies to explore large and untested blocks of land through an exploration license issued by the state. This is a departure from the traditional competitive leasing approach with state lands, but it is not an unfamiliar concept to native corporations. For years on our own lands, we have worked with companies under exploration agreements whereby prospective areas could be later converted to lease. Fundamentally, this concept is market-driven, whereby industry would advise the state which lands are of interest, thus potentially reducing the time in which to acquire lands for exploration. Capital and expertise is available and focused on a particular area. The concept is designed to supplement, not replace, the state's current competitive leasing program. Series supports the basic concept of large block exploration licensing, and we will be pleased to work with the legislature as you consider and refine the present legislation with respect to areas to be included or excluded, time periods for licensing and leasing, and relationship of the program to adjacent landholders. In closing, I appreciate the opportunity to provide our comments to the Senate Oil and Gas Committee, carefully crafted the legislation currently be considered by the committee and help stimulate additional exploration of Alaska's future potential oil and gas resources. As an Alaska Native corporation, SERI has a special relationship to Alaska's future. Even in today's highly mobile society, 50 years from now, the majority of our shareholders will still call Alaska home. This is where our economic future must be secured. Thank you.
Do we have any questions from the committee? Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Booth. We will go to Mr. Al Hastings and then to David Lappy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Alan Hastings, and I'm the Director of External Affairs for Conoco's Anchorage Division. I appreciate the opportunity to make a few brief comments on SB 150, the large block licensing legislation. I'd like to commend DNR and the Senate Special Committee on Oil and Gas for developing legislation that would augment DNR's existing leasing program for frontier areas. Certainly any action that will help explore and hopefully develop
is my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hastings. I have one for you. Do you have knowledge of what the cost of the bond would be, like on a per-million-dollar basis?
I would guess that an exploration license in an Ontario like that would run in the tens of millions of dollars.
Okay, any further questions? Thank you, David Lappy. In Anchorage, and following him will be Keith Tabler, and then Pete Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Dave Lappy, president of Life Resources, Inc., an independent petroleum exploration company based here in Anchorage. I'm a 74 graduate of the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, and I gained my exploration experience both in Alaska and Australia. In Australia, between 81 and 91, I explored under exploration legislation. I already have 10 years of practical experience using the concept being discussed here. My overseas experience has convinced me that Alaska needs to adopt exploration license legislation to ensure that Alaska's favorable geology attracts its fair share of the international exploration dollar. And given the higher cost of operating in this state, the exploration license terms need to be at least as favorable as terms given by other countries who offer exploration licenses. The bill currently proposed goes some way toward filling this need. However, there are five items which we would like to see included in the current bill, and two items which we would ask you to eliminate. The first item we seek to include relates to the bidding process. Under the current bill, companies bid dollar amounts, not work programs. We would like to see the actual work programs bid, that is, miles of seismic shot and exploration well footage drills and so on. This will help level the playing field between large companies and small ones. The large companies offer large exploration budgets. The small companies can offer innovative exploration concepts and exploration efficiencies. The second item to include also relates to bidding. Work programs bid by companies should be tied to a timeline that encourages early exploration and development. The current bill does not require exploration to commence until the last year of the license. Up to 10 years of the state's valuable time could be lost waiting for the companies to perform their work. Work programs to the lack of the license should be bid on the annualized basis to encourage early work in the life of the license. Companies not performing work or work on an annual basis without a valid overriding reason should lose the license. The third item is a requirement for companies who own exploration licenses to relinquish 25% of the remaining license area every 2 years. This will prevent warehousing of large parcels of acreage, create turnover in the acreage holdings, and stimulate industry interest. The state could even offer relinquished areas as conventional oil and gas leases on a cash bonus bid basis. That would be applicable in areas that have been shown to have high exploration potential. The fourth item is also related to the warehousing of acreage. The current bill exempts areas acquired as exploration licenses from exploration holding limitations. If items one and two requiring the early work that I just mentioned are adopted, I see no reason to limit the acreage holdings by a group of related companies. However, if companies are not required to perform work on their licenses, I believe that each group of related companies should be limited in the acreage they hold to the current level. Related companies are either parent or subsidiary companies or companies that are controlled by common owners. The fifth item to include is a requirement to submit all exploration data acquired to the state, which would be open file data available to the public for the cost of copying upon surrender of that part of the license, or 2 years, whichever is later. This promotes efficient use of exploration data already required and speeds up the exploration process. The first item we seek to eliminate in the current bill is the oral outcry auction. We believe that the best interests of the state would be served by offering those areas covered by competing applications either a sealed bid work program basis between the initial applicants could be limited to those areas a certain distance, say 10 miles, from existing producing units or wells. I thank you for your time and look forward to more active exploration industry under the modified bidding system. It deserves the support of every Alaskan.
Mr. Lappy, in your testimony, you, when you were talking about exploration data, you said, and I'm looking at your letter, but you said reproduction on relinquishment of the area or after 2 years, whichever is later, and in your letter you said whichever is first.
The intent is that the companies that still have an active interest in the area do not give up the data until they have surrendered that area and no longer have an interest.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Lappy. Keith Tabler?
Developed to more specifically identify these areas. Total lands under light
should be conducted upon the annual posting of work commitment performance bonds or other security in favor of the state in amounts not less than the equivalent work commitment for that year. Commissioners should adopt regulations to evaluate competing proposals. The evaluation process should be based only on the original written proposal submitted by the respective licensee. This process should employ a sealed bidding method only. Conversion from license to a lease should fall under existing state leasing regulations, AS 3805-180-I-U-X-Z, and subject to the acreage chargeability qualifications of AS 3805-140-C. Closing, Unocal discussed the merits of the foregoing comments with a large number of companies who hold working interest ownership in the state of Alaska oil and gas leases and actively participate in exploration operations, and has identified overwhelming support for some form of modification to the proposed legislation in the areas addressed above. We at Unocal look forward to working with the Committee and the Division of Oil and Gas at the Department as the development and enhancement of this bill progresses. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tabler, and I'm sorry that I abused your name. I was reading off a sheet that was given to me, and it wasn't the person here in Juneau who wrote it down wrong. I won't say who it was. I do have a couple questions for you. In your identification of frontier areas, would you exclude all of the Cook Inlet area and the North Slope, or as the previous testifier suggested, those areas beyond some distance, say 10 miles or whatever the distance might be?
I think that the Cook Inlet Basin to Unocal, in as much as our infrastructure and major focus and area of operation is located there. There is an active competitive lease sale program already in place to cover the majority of the Cook Inlet Basin, and feel that outside of those areas would be areas that could be and should be considered for exploration license. On the North Slope, we feel it's appropriate more so in the interior areas and not so much on areas.
Okay, one other statement you made is you suggested excluding those areas that have been subject to lease sales. Why would you exclude those areas that have been subject and perhaps were not explored or were not developed? Why would you exclude those from exploration licensing?
I think that the exempt sale process provides adequately for the ability for those lands to come up under a competitive process.
Do you have any further questions of Mr. Tabler?
No.
Thank you for your testimony, and we'll go to Pete Nelson, also in Anchorage.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Pete Nelson, and I'm the land manager for Texas Coast Alaska Regional Office. I appreciate the opportunity to share Texas Coast views with you regarding the proposed legislation which provides a large block licensing. First, let me say that Senate Bill 150 presents an interesting and, we think, workable
Thank you, Ms. Nelson, for your testimony. Questions from the committee? There are none, and I thank you. Is there anybody else in Anchorage who has signed up to testify on Senate Bill 150 that I have not yet called on? All right, for those who are still in Anchorage, if you have written testimony that you have not already provided to the committee, and we have received written testimony from some, you're welcome to provide that to the staff at the Legislative Information Office, and they will fax it to us, and we will distribute it to the members' packets. And next, we will go to come back here to Juneau and take testimony. And first is Mr. James Davis. If you just flip the microphone switch forward and speak into it and state your name and who you represent for the record, and you can get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate Oil and Gas Committee, my name is Jim Davis. I'm Senior Vice President of Exploration and Land for ARCO Alaska. I'm pleased to testify in support of Senate Bill 150, Exploration Licensing. We believe that this supplement to the state's leasing program can invigorate exploration for oil and gas. It can do this by substantially reducing the time required to acquire secure title to enough land to justify exploration activities while meeting all environmental laws and regulations. First, I'd like to review the development of this bill because I think it will help us see the policy choices facing the state. And then I would like to address the main objections that I've been hearing and explain why they don't change our support for this bill. A little over a year ago, I sat in joint hearings before this body and introduced the concept of exploration licensing. Many of you may recall that there was great concern then that exploration in Alaska was declining and oil companies were scaling back and ending their operations, presumably in favor of more attractive overseas opportunities. I must admit, I was also feeling a sense of loneliness as I tried to interest prospective partners to join with ARCO in drilling Kublam in the Beaufort Sea, which turned out to be a discovery. At that time, the legislature asked us to talk about ways in which exploration in Alaska could be stimulated. As we developed ideas, we considered various options. Standing back and looking at exploration in Alaska, we recognized that it's a very costly and high-risk venture. We thought about the ways the state could reduce our direct exploration investment. It was tempting to think of tax credits because they've proven to be effective in other countries such as Canada in stimulating drilling. However, we concluded that the state would not be able to bear these upfront costs, especially in light of the fiscal gap crisis it's facing. The other alternative that we examined was reducing the time required to find and develop oil. We focused on the state leasing program. Here we found real possibilities to shorten exploration time. For example, under the present leasing system, it can take 5 to 10 years to accumulate enough land position to justify the high expense of an exploratory well. This puts Alaska at a competitive disadvantage with foreign countries, and that's one reason we see other oil companies leaving Alaska and investing abroad. Let me go back to Kublam. When I was looking worldwide for partners, we discussed Alaska with people who had not worked here before. And they told us that Alaska, in terms of geology, is as prospective as anywhere in the world. But land access is a real problem because of the time required to develop a land position. Two activities which take time are waiting first for a prospect to move through the five-year leasing program, and then developing a consolidated position out of the patchwork of individual lease ownerships covering the prospect. Even more uncertain is the consolidation of ownership on adjacent leases after a discovery. So we believe that speeding up the process of securing title would help the state's goal of invigorating exploration. We found some interesting ideas in the methods used by other foreign countries and included those ideas in the basic concept for exploration licensing. We feel the existing lease process could be supplemented with licensing based on work commitments, public disclosure, and competition. And by the way, this approach has been used in the U.S. as well as other countries, and so it's not an untested concept. I assume, Mr. Chairman, that members know the contents of the bill, and I don't need to do anything but to summarize that the bill is really simple. Its main purpose is to shorten the time required to explore. It gives a secure land position in return for a bonded work commitment. It relies on market competition to prevent abuse or giveaways. And it provides protections to the state by allowing the commissioner to reject any proposal and revert to the existing leasing program. Beginning in 1991, ARCO was asked by a number of legislators to come up with a concept that would attract the industry back to Alaska. Last summer, we began working with DNR to help craft the exploration licensing legislation. We made suggestions that advanced the goals of getting exploration moving and helping the state to realize tax and royalty revenues from new sources as soon as possible. We've resisted endorsing concepts that dilute this bill just for the sake of compromise or getting a bill passed that everyone agrees with. We believe that the state is in the state's interest in getting exploration accelerated, and that should be kept foremost in everyone's mind. Now, let me respond to the major arguments that I've heard against this bill. Foremost, I'm surprised that others do not see this in the state's interest and everyone's interest involved in the state to get exploration moving. Maybe it would be clear if this bill were entitled Exploration Work Commitment Bill. That title captures for me the fact that while land is being acquired, the real effect of licensing is to get exploration work done. All of the criticisms or amendments that I've heard serve to weaken or dilute the goal of speeding up exploration. Let me illustrate by looking at these objections one at a time. I hear some say that leasing system is working fine, no license bill is needed. Yes, leasing does happen, and clearly the state and the industry have benefited, but I would rather say that the benefits have come in spite of leasing, not because of leasing. Discovering and developing crude oil, for example, has much more to do with the quality of the reservoir than the effectiveness of the leasing system. Furthermore, revenues from the state bonuses and rentals have amounted to less than 1% of the total revenues from 81 through 92. Clearly, the state benefits the most from discovery and development. To me, a way to supplement the lease system with a faster process, such as licensing, is needed. A more specific complaint is that the bill should exclude broad portions of the North Slope and Cook Inlet from licensing. The reason I hear is that licensing is only needed in frontier areas, not mature areas. Let me offer you a few thoughts as an explorationist on this. First, I'd like to debunk the idea that the North Slope and Cook Inlet are mature areas. Now, they're producing areas, that's true, but they haven't been anything but thoroughly explored. For example, the North Slope bounded by Beaufort Sea on the north, the Brooks Range on the south, the Canning River on the east, and the Colville River on the west contains 12 million acres, and there have only been 40 exploration wells drilled for an average of one for every 300,000 acres. For comparison, Texas has an average of one well for every 1,000 acres. We agree that this should be a frontier area bill, but we think that licensing should be available for both intellectual as well as geographic frontiers. Our Cook Inlet example discovery, the first in 25 years, is a good example of this. Most basins go through cycles of discovery. Cook Inlet is now in its second cycle. We rethought the geologic concepts in Cook Inlet and applied them and found oil in an area that the industry had all but abandoned. There is land in both the Cook Inlet and on the North Slope that's been leased and returned to the state or offered for sale and not bought. These areas are intellectual frontiers as the new concepts are developed, and these areas should be available for licensing. The second thought is that the Arctic North Slope is a particularly poor choice for blanket exclusion. This is because new sources of oil are needed to keep taps running as long as possible. Crude rates through taps will be declining significantly over the next 10 years, and modifications such as shutting down pump stations will be needed. Over time, it will be more and more expensive to bring taps capacity back up. New discoveries will have to bear those costs. As time proceeds, discoveries will have to be larger and larger to justify taps investments. I just don't think that we can expect to find larger and larger fields. We must try to find as many smaller size fields as soon as possible to maximize the economic efficiency of taps and keep that rate from declining. There is an added benefit the longer taps continues to operate because more oil will be produced from existing fields like Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk. Exploration licensing is especially applicable on the North Slope because we only have a limited window of opportunity. I've heard no one argue that licensing will slow down the pace of exploration. Therefore, I'm forced to conclude that suggestions for exclusion from licensing are really suggestions to purposely slow down exploration. Industry opposition to licensing in some areas is proof that they believe their competitors are willing to make work commitments to explore in Alaska. This is the last area the state should exclude. It's too critical. To summarize, I think there are no additional inclusionary language is needed in this bill. The commissioner has more than enough discretion to protect the state's interests. I should note to the side that we've seen some forecasts that TAP's throughput in 10 years will be down to half of what it is right now. It takes 10 years to develop a discovery on the North Slope and bring it to production. That means that to start filling that gap, we need exploration success this year, next year, and perhaps the year after in order to really fill in that gap. Exploration licensing is one way to proceed. You may hear from other companies who support such exclusion. Usually, these are companies which have focused what little exploration activity they have into a single geographic area. They say they favor licensing except where they are currently working. I ask you as legislators to judge whether restrictions serve the interest of the state or the self-interest of those seeking exclusions to the licensing bill. Do they feel that licensing will bring increased competition to their areas of interest? The performance bond has also been criticized as being too onerous, but it would be a mistake to provide relief from bonding. A reality is that Alaskan exploration is high risk and high cost. Nothing has changed for players without the financial ability or interest in licensing. They can continue to participate through the existing leasing system, or, as they have very successfully succeeded, they can form joint ventures with others and seek licenses themselves. Dropping the bonding requirement encourages speculation, not exploration, and holding land without exploring is of no benefit to the state. The oral outcry form of bidding has been criticized as not being viable. We see oral auctions as protections for the person who submits the initial proposal, which may be subject to partial disclosure. The originator may be at a disadvantage during bidding by competitors having that information. The argument against oral auction is that it will be too complex, but it's really fairly simple. In fact, it happens every Saturday morning where I grew up in the stock pens. After the state has solicited and evaluated proposals, it develops a common basis for the bidding, and the competitors bid a work commitment in terms of the dollar amount. There's really nothing unworkable here, and the concept is certainly not new. As I mentioned earlier, one of the fundamental protections for the state and the industry is the existence of market competition. One of the most disturbing arguments I've heard against this is that some companies will not use licensing because they have only limited funds available for Alaska. In essence, these people are saying that the state should not speed up the pace of exploring for or discovering oil until they are prepared to reinvest in Alaska. And this is probably because they believe they have better foreign opportunities. This demonstrates that Alaska is at a competitive disadvantage, as I mentioned earlier. Exploration licensing will help level the playing field by making Alaska more attractive for exploration. Critics of this legislation are quick to point out that ARCO has committed nearly $1 billion to an active ongoing 5-year exploration program, and that exploration licensing is not fair to other companies who have not made such commitments. But we should remember that the goal of this legislation is to have a process which speeds up exploration and creates competition for making work commitments. Just the introduction of this bill has created a climate of competition within the industry, and that's good for the state. I presume that other companies will seek and win licenses. I hope that ARCO can benefit from licensing, but I also hope that the state benefits from licensing, because that will mean that exploration in Alaska has been reinvigorated. That's the end of my prepared comments, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Davis, I have a few. Your suggestions that we do not exclude the Cook Inlet basins and North Slope, but there's been other testimony offered that suggests perhaps a distance requirement be placed in there to, you know, perhaps protect existing fields that are being developed. Do you have any comments on that?
I don't find that as objectionable.
Any suggestion on what distance? I've heard 6 miles, I've heard 10 miles.
Short as possible. It's interesting, really, that the discovery we made in Cook Inlet, which we announced was commercial this year, is sitting under existing production. And we hope and believe that the field extends over the area that we just picked up in leasing.
I wonder how much sooner this area could have been brought on had exploration licensing been available, and would have been available for leases right up to the boundaries of the existing producing unit.
What is the cost for bonding? And we've heard that it's out of sight, and you know, heard numbers before, and on a percentage of the cost of doing business, if we can use that, or you know, what are we talking about in terms of the cost of the bond?
We were concerned about that because we think a vigorous, independent community is important, which Alaska does not have. And so in researching that, we believe that bonding basically is 10 cents on the dollar is the cost of bonding, securing bonds, for people that have assets.
That seems high to me for typical bonding for construction work, that there's probably a lot more risk involved in something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Your statement, you said the commissioner has more than enough discretion to protect the state's interest, and there are some, myself included, to think perhaps this bill puts too much discretion at the hands of the commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost makes an oil czar in this, and we in the legislature want to make sure that we have the proper constraints to that, and want to make sure that the commissioner has adequate discretion, but mm-hmm. not too much.
Well, we think that the commissioner should have discretion so that if when a proposal is put out for public comment and there are competing proposals offered, that they would be able to take the competing proposals and come out with one proposal to bid on. And or if it's in the state's best interest and there's a lot of interest in a particular area, you can go to the conventional bidding system. And I think all of that spurs competition, and if administered properly, like anything else, if it's done properly, it'll be very effective.
Further questions? Senator Sharp.
Thank you. I guess just a little bit more information on the bonding aspect, since that seemed to be fairly consistent from some of the people that testified and their proposals to trigger action that had to be done on an annual basis, and if not done performance-wise, that the deal's off. Since the bonding is to some an expense, I'd rather see put in the ground. On timing constraints, I'd like your comments.
The reason why we were motivated towards a dollar amount is that we don't think it's appropriate for the DNR or whoever ministers the legislation to judge exploration programs work, because we may think up front that we want to have 2 years of seismic and then 2 years of drilling. We may run a year of seismic and say we don't need that extra year, we want to go into the drilling phase, and to be held to a fixed program, I think is not right, and so the working with the dollars only gives you the kind of flexibility that you really need. I believe there are ways to work. Around bonding, if that is the only thing about the legislation that is, there are ways to have bonding, but maybe have it less onerous than what is proposed here, as long as the basic concept of the bill is protected. And the basic concept is keeps speculators from sitting on large blocks of state leases, but that's no bad state or people who do want to explore.
I had some of the same questions earlier of Mr. Eason. You weren't here. I don't know if you listened to my teleconference or heard about it, but regarding the quantitative analysis of the proposal versus some qualitative analysis. But if you're going into the program, and as you say, you discover that maybe you have enough after 1 year of seismic work, mm-hmm. then you've effectively changed the program. Would that also change the quantity, change the amount that you've already committed to a certain amount?
what do you do if you, you know, you determine you don't need that? Do you go ahead and invest it somewhere else? You come back and ask for a change in your license?
Well, I would think that anyone facing a license would be very cautious about what the amount that they're proposing, and I think it's just like in bonus bidding, conventional lease system. Everyone stands the risk of leaving money on the table, and those of us in the business are willing to take that risk. And I think in exploration licensing, making a work commitment is a very serious undertaking, and there's risks associated with it.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Davis.
You bet.
Glad you could join us today. Robert Erickson.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Robert Erickson. I'm wearing several hats tonight. One is administrative assistant for Teamsters Local 959, and I'm also Mano Fry, president of AFL-CIO, and J.C. Wingfield, the Plumbers & Pipefitters out of Fairbanks. We like the concept of this bill, and when I say we, I'm talking about the leadership of the AFL-CIO and about 50,000 members and their family members. We have both public and private sector people, almost probably around even. We think that the state is in a very serious situation that is growing more serious, not just year by year, but day by day. The only real industry that we have in this state is the oil industry. And that's our revenues, and our business is generated off the oil revenues that come off the pipeline. I think it's imperative that we do something to stimulate more exploration. Even whatever they find out there, if they do, is not probably going to replace what is being lost, but the state needs to recover as much as they can the oil that is out there and to try to replenish or stave off the decline that's happening. We don't have another business or industry that's going to come into the state to take that place. The faster that and the easier that it is for the industry to go out and do exploration and to stimulate it, by stimulating it, is the best interest of this state. I think there's no question about that. I've heard two nights of testimony. It's interesting that the opposition to this bill seems to be the same points were brought up. I think the question that should be asked, and I don't know if you're going to go into a subcommittee like the House did or whatever, but it'd be interesting to ask the people that are objecting to this bill how much money they have programmed for exploration for the next couple of years. Just might be interested in the answer. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Any questions from the committee? Thank you. John Ringstead? And if there's anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 150, we have the sign-up sheet, and please come up and sign, and we'll take your testimony. If not, we'll wrap it up with Mr. Ringstead so Ms. Erickson can go home and take care of her children.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've given the written statement, run through this. There's a couple of paragraphs in here that talk about how the thing works. You probably heard that. You don't need to hear it again from me at this stage of the evening. So I'll just run through the rest of the statement, skipping a couple of them. For the record, my name is John Ringstead. I'm Associate Director of Government Affairs with BP Exploration Alaska, Inc. Thank the committee for the opportunity to testify to present BP's view on SB 150, the governor's large block leasing bill. BP supports the idea of large block licensing for relatively unexplored areas in Alaska. BP's exploration focus is on the North Slope and will remain there. We believe the licensing approach could facilitate the exploration of so-called interior basins in Alaska, basically all the state outside of Cook Inlet and the North Slope. We applaud the governor and those in administration who have worked to develop this bill.
breaking out of a traditional mindset that 30 years of using the same system will cause, and for having the willingness to propose a new system that they think will work better than the leasing system. However, despite our support for the general idea of large block licensing for the relatively unexplored areas of Alaska, we oppose SB 150 as currently written. We have three specific matters of concern. First, its application in North Slope. Second, the oral outcry option provision. And third, the exemption which allows the warehousing of acreage. Our concern is that SB 150 would allow licensing, our first concern, allow the licensing on the North Slope, particularly in the planning areas for the remaining state lease sales scheduled for the slope. We believe the state's interest would be harmed, not helped, by allowing the currently planned lease sales to be cast aside in favor of licensing program. Lease sales bring in cash bonuses, licensing program would not. Unlike lease sales in unexplored areas, the licensing, which bring in minimum bonuses, the recent sales in the North Slope show that there's enough interest and the bonuses up there would be substantial. Thus, to stop using the lease sales in the slope, which would represent a significant cash loss to the state. For licensing to be justified, therefore, it has to be great enough to offset those losses. The chief advantages that licensing offers are the possibility that more exploration and earlier exploration. We doubt that licensing would deliver very much of either of those advantages on the slope. There's already more exploration interest on the slope than anywhere else in the state, and the slope is already likely to end up being just as thoroughly explored under conventional licensing as it would under large block licensing. Moreover, it is not clear that licensing would bring about exploration on the slope any faster than conventional leasing would. It is expected that the exploration drilling under licensing program would begin as early as 2 years after the license is issued. But our Cascade well that we're drilling this year is on land that we leased only 2 years ago in 1991. We also plan to drill our Yukon Gold well later this year, and it too is on land leased in 1991. Arco's Cave Bear well, scheduled to be drilled next year, is on land that they leased just last year. So even though it is sometimes true that exploratory drilling doesn't begin until 8 or 9 years after a lease is issued, it is also true that much of the current exploratory drilling on the slope is occurring as soon after a lease sale as it would be under a large block licensing program. There's one more thing you should consider before letting the slope be open to large block licensing. Conventional leases, allowing companies to come in and bid for their leases even though they do not plan to operate these leases they may acquire. They are, in effect, investors rather than operators. The licensing program, in contrast, gives tremendous advantage to any company who already operates in the vicinity because they already have a base of operations, they have a working knowledge and experience in that area. On the slope, there are two dominant operators. Is it good state policy to let one or both lock up the rest of the slope under a licensing program? Or would it be better to continue letting other companies have a chance for a piece of the action as they do under conventional lease sales? For BP's part, we're not afraid of more competition, but we welcome it. So far, I've talked about the first concern. We've got two others. The second one deals with the oral outcry auction. This is a singular departure from the way similar concessions are offered elsewhere around the world. The usual method is with sealed written bids that are submitted in advance, much the way bonus bids are submitted in Alaska in its competitive lease sales. The system of leased bids in advance, of sealed bids in advance, makes everyone bid on the basis of their best view of the prospect and is likely to attract more participants in the auction than the oral outcry. BP prefers sealed bids. Our third concern is about whether a lease being carved out of a license area counts against the state's limit on how many acres a company can have under lease at one time. SB 150, page 5, lines 8 and 9, specifically exempts a lease with acreage limits. We see no reason for the state to give such an exemption. The acreage limits were enacted as part of the original State Land Act in 1959 in order to prevent companies from warehousing large numbers of leases. The state wanted companies to explore and develop the leases they got, or else surrender them back to the state. This is shown by the fact that leases in an exploration unit or a development unit are not counted against acres limit. With the unit, the state knows there is a plan and has to approve it, either explore the leases or develop the leases and produce them, depending on whether it's a production lease or an exploration unit. If you think about it, there's no reason for the exploration exemption, even from the license holder's point of view.
why would a license holder be trying to get a lease for part of the license area in the first place? Either he's found something there or has good reason to believe there's something there. But in either case, there's no reason why he cannot put this lease into a unit if he doesn't want to count it against his acreage limit. If he does unitize the lease, then the state will continue to have assurance that there are real plans for further exploration and or development for that lease. BP believes a lease being carved out of license area should count against the acreage limit. In summary, BP supports the general idea of large block licensing for relatively unexplored areas of Alaska. We oppose SB 150 in its present form because it does not deal adequately with the issue of licensing on the slope. We also have serious concerns about the provisions in 150 to use the oral outcry auction instead of sealed bids and about its exemption for the anti-warehousing acreage limits for leases carved out of license areas. With these corrections, we would welcome BP, I'm going to get to the point here, I got to start wearing my glasses. With these corrections, we would welcome SB 150 as a progressive new approach for encouraging oil and gas exploration in Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to answer questions if I can. I don't know that I can get them all. If they're not technical, I can probably get to them.
I'm going to borrow my glasses. Senator Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how technical this is, but to me it is. What is the limitation on total acreage?
500,000 acres.
I mean, under lease?
500,000 under lease
currently.
And I think with this, then there's the acreage limits for licensing is 500,000.
I think 500,000 under lease is what you can do now.
Yeah.
I got it over here.
Of each category submerged at uplands.
So this would be 500,000 under lease under present law, and then anything acquired up to 30,000 on each license would not count towards the 500,000.
We are proposing with legislation, Representative Sharp, that there be a 500,000 acre eligible, up to 5,000 acres for large block licensing, and any lease that is subsequently converted from a license be limited to 30,000 acres in size. You can convert more than one lease, but only one lease would be limited to 30,000 acres.
But would that count? That wouldn't count toward your 500,000?
That's correct. We're proposing that licensing be exempt from the statutory limits for leasing.
For those still listening by teleconference, the answer to that question was from Ms. Jim Eason, who's the director of the Division of Oil and Gas. John, you heard my previous questions, and I see you have concerns about using this method on the North Slope. What about some of the suggestions offered by some to applying a distance requirement and maybe allowing this on portions of the North Slope distant enough from existing wells? Is that something that you've looked at and have a position on?
I would guess, and I'm not the technical expertise for BP on this one, but I guess it's safe to say that our people are willing to look at different proposals and try and work with them, and have been trying to do that in terms of nailing it down specifically. I don't know which ones we would or wouldn't support, but willing to look at them and try and figure out which ones we think work or are realistic or aren't. So we'll continue to work with you as specific items or suggestions and language comes up.
We heard the question asked by the previous testifiers of what are the plans for exploration by some of the people who are criticizing some of this. And can you state what the plans are for in the next 5 years for exploration?
The next 5 years, I don't think I can get that far. This year we've got three wells we're doing, one that we're participating in with ARCO, which is our biggest year in several years. As I understand it, the plan for next year is to have another good program beyond 2 years, going out to 5 years. I don't know what our proposal is. I think if you go back to Julian Darley's comments a month or so ago, he's stated a kind of a different outlook of BP senior management in terms of the approach to Alaska and development in Alaska and exploration in Alaska, and I think that's why you're seeing the change in increased activity in our part. And hopefully that continues.
You've just triggered something in my memory. This is probably the inappropriate time to say it, but I will anyway. I was surprised, maybe that's a kind word to use, that BP's and ARCO's endorsement of President Clinton's plan for increased energy tax, and I, especially in light of Mr. Darley's comments to us, he said what we need is tax stability. I see that as anything but tax stability. It's, you know, it's instability, and it's it'd be a regressive tax, especially harmful to Alaska, and especially at a time when we're doing what we can to perhaps encourage the industry. But that's my feeling, and I don't know if it represents the rest of the committee, but it makes me feel better till we say it.
We'll politely say no comment.
I don't expect you to respond to that.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Ringstad. Mr. Easton, would you like to join us and perhaps respond to some of the things, and if in your list you might talk about the suggestions for exclusions on North Slope and Cook Inlet, and also the public outcry. Those are two areas that I know that seem to run a consistent theme throughout, and other things that you may have picked up that you could offer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sharp, thank you for that opportunity. I wanted to say just a couple of things, I guess, more philosophical than right on point with some of the testimony you've heard so far. I've been involved, as most of you know, with oil and gas issues and oil and gas exploration and development for about 20 years now, a little bit more than 20 years. And there are two things that have been consistent in my view over those years, no matter which job I've been in or which side of the fence I've sat on. I've been on both, as you all know. Maybe I've been on both and then back again at some times. But I actually came to Alaska for ARCO and worked with AMECO before that in New Orleans. And then I worked with the U.S. Geological Survey in more of an academic realm and then with the state. And looking at several different perspectives, or from several different perspectives, there are a couple of things that I can draw as conclusions from those experiences. The first one is things never stay the same. And big dogs here are small dogs there. And I think a lot of what we're hearing can be referenced to those two concepts. People are trying, I think, in trying to get consensus, at least my view, on watching the industry react to this piece of legislation. There are a couple of things going on. Everybody's modeling what they want based on where they sit today. I think there's a lot of that happening. People recognize, for example, that ARCO has been very public lately in their success and in their commitment for investing large amounts of dollars. But at the same time, we can remember a time when BP spent a lot of money for a prospect called Muckluck, and unfortunately it was not the best decision in the world. But there are big dogs here today, and there are small dogs somewhere else. There are other places in the world where both of those companies aren't represented as great a commitment as they are here in Alaska today. And the same thing can be said in the obverse for the Conocos and the Marathons and the Unocals of the world. But they all are focused from their perspective here today in how they want this bill to work or not work. And I think that you need to keep that in mind as you're reviewing what you want to do with it, and try to put on the spectacles of an averaging effect, if you will, for all those different viewpoints. Because if you select one at the expense of the others, I think you'll make a mistake. One of the things that I also want to do real briefly is just react to a couple of the points that Mr. Ringstad made in his testimony, because the same points were made last night, and I think that they perhaps are misperceiving what we intend with this legislation, and we need to make sure that they understand that if that's the case, they really have misperceived us. And I want to clear up for the record that in fact, we don't intend to cast aside the North Slope planning areas in the foothills or anywhere else. What we've asked is to have the flexibility to react to situations where we think it's in the state's best interest, based upon the facts at the time and public comment, to use an alternative if it looks as if that alternative will be more successful in encouraging early exploration and development. But as I think you all are aware from reading the legislation, we have in no way suggested that any specific area of the North Slope would be an area that we would intend to use this. As a matter of fact, we've said, generally speaking, that it's for areas other than the North Slope and Cook Inlet, but we think it's appropriate to keep that option alive if it develops that the interest in large areas of the North Slope won't be undertaken, or the exploration will not be undertaken under the competitive leasing process. And I think a good case in point is to remember that both of these companies that have been most active in discussing this bill, ARCO and BP, today are very close, as I recall, to bumping up against the 500,000 acre limitation. So as you
So as you look at whether or not you want to establish that cap and keep it where it is, you may in fact be making the decision by doing that, that there will be no participation by two of the largest participants in state today. So we need to keep that focus, that, you know, that things are going to change. But whether or not leasing versus licensing is likely to lead to earlier exploration and development, I think is a very valid point of contention. But I would also call you back when you look at that question to the fact that BP, for example, today has some leases that are almost 30 years old in the Colville Delta. Leases that have not been explored, although they've been in their hands for about 30 years, and would not be explored were it not for a settlement that we just did this past fall that arranged for a work commitment by BP and others to take place in exchange for an agreement by the state resetting the clock, if you will, on a contested running of those leases. So in every case, I think it's important to have real firm commitments, whether it be under leasing or licensing, that make sure that people do what they are intended to do under the lease or license on a timely basis. And that brings me really to the last point I wanted to make. You've heard testimony about whether or not you should request or require more than the full amount of a work commitment and bonding. And obviously, we felt very strongly about that when we put the language before you, because we think it's important that the state get what it bargains for in this process if licensing is allowed. If you set the standard too low, you have the unfortunate circumstance then where we will be left to try to judge among competing proposals, none of whom we are assured will ever be carried out. And we think that would be a mistake and ultimately would not lead to the thing that we're hoping to accomplish, which is real participation by people who not only have the commitment, but the resources or the ability to get those resources, even if it means having to partner with other people so that exploration can occur.
Mr. Hastings, can I break in right there on that point? There are suggestions about annual bonding instead of for the whole program. Any thoughts about that and making it easier for people, you know, obviously less money up front?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have some thoughts on that. Two thoughts, really. The first is that you have to remember the balance we're trying to get with this piece of legislation. On the one hand, the state would be giving up an extraordinarily valuable right for an extended period of time to explore exclusively, with no competition, a fairly large area. And in return, and at the same time, there is a right to convert areas that the licensee wants to lease, so that there's really no hook left. You're giving away the full bundle of rights, essentially, with a very valuable right, which, if there's a discovery, or more than one discovery, will be an extraordinarily valuable right for that licensee, in exchange for a commitment upfront for a specified work program. The only way to be sure of getting that work program is to have full bonding that I can think of. We struggle with that, and we really couldn't come to any other conclusion. If you want to adjust that balance so that you do the work bonding, if you will, on an annual basis, I think that at that time you would have to restrict the rights that are transferred so that the person really doesn't have the rights until all of this, you know, the sequential bonding has been accomplished. Otherwise, you are giving a lot and requiring a little. And under those circumstances, I think that it's more likely than not that you're going to have several programs where the state gets very little of the commitment that was made to it, and potentially a program or two where the state, for this segmented bonding, will have transferred the rights to hopefully some very valuable resources.
And I'd appreciate it if you just hold for a second. I just want to check to see if the Homer site is still online. Is anybody online in Homer?
Yes, we're still here, but my participant needs to leave unless he can get on right away.
Okay, is that Larry Smith?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Mr. Easton, would you mind just holding for a second?
Sure.
I apologize, Mr. Smith, for the meeting going a little bit long, but we will go to Senate Bill 134 for the purpose of taking testimony from Larry Smith and Homer. Go ahead, sir, state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just representing myself, and I understand how your schedule works, and I don't object to waiting even to another time. I wanted to just very briefly comment that there are some things I believe that we ought to do before we start providing our credits for things like liquidated purchase arrearages, which, of course, means in plain English, overdue tax payments. Things that I've been an advocate advocate for several years of is that the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Response Fund, the 470 Fund, properly spent procurement would reduce the cost for companies like Tesoro MAPCO specifically for contingency planning under state law. It wouldn't affect Tesoro's cost of moving crude oil under federal law under Open 90. If we had the same kind of state participation in these things, it could more than equal in time what's proposed to be done by these credits. And I think it's past time for Cook Inlet to be treated equitably. And by that, I would just like to point you at the research that was done by Deborah Vogt, formerly staff to the Senate Special Committee on Oil and Gas, which is available in your records. And it shows in detail how, aside from the state contribution to that part of the general fund called the 470 Fund, the state, through royalty netback provisions, pays an average of $18 million annually of LAS to pipeline service companies, spill prevention, and response costs. That is, the state of Alaska pays a full 25% of the bill in Prince William Sound. In Cook Inlet, the state share is less than 4%. While I don't believe in devising any method of excusing companies from paying their delinquent taxes, I do believe that they pay more than their share for spill prevention and response planning, and the state should treat Cook Inlet equitably. I can't repeat that often enough. It's to be treated like a second or third class part of Alaska has gone on far too long. In time, I'll repeat once more, this will be worth more to these companies and to all of the rest of us than this proposal for a form of corporate welfare. And thank you very much for hearing me tonight.
Thank you for providing that testimony, for standing by while we were going through the other testimony. Any questions from the committee? There are no questions, Mr. Smith, and we thank very much. And is there anybody else in Homer who wishes to testify?
No, there isn't, so I'll be signing off.
Thank you, and good night.
Thank you.
And we will be back to Senate Bill 150, and thank you, Mr. Easton. You may continue.
That was all my comments, Mr. Chairman, unless you have other questions.
The outcry auction and why that was in, and maybe some response to some of the criticisms of that.
The reason we have that, Mr. Chairman, is because we believe that on balance it is likely to be more in the state's interest, that it's likely we're going to receive stiffer competition under those circumstances than we would under the sealed bid. And precisely because really the obverse of what people have told you they're afraid of. It's our belief that generally when people have an opportunity to recast a bid, when they see that bid has not been successful, presuming they have the authority to do that, it's more likely that they will be willing to bid something higher. And we saw it as an opportunity to, again, in weighing the balance that we're trying to strike between the rights we gave and what we want in return, that it would be a point that we could stand to make more money on that particular point. We also feel that based upon the comments we've heard, that there is a bit of a red herring in the issue of whether or not people have the authority or the signing authority or the spending authority at the level here in Alaska. The proposal we have in front of you is one that would be unique. In the event this legislation passes and we find ourselves 2 years from now at the first potential issuing of a license, anyone who has a serious interest in trying to bid for that license will have made sure that someone with the authority to bid and to raise the bid, if necessary, would be here in Anchorage, in Fairbanks, or in Juneau, wherever you choose to do it, in order to participate.
I'm just kind of curious about how this is done. You know, when you're dealing with millions of dollars, it may be different from, you know, typically when you go down to Joe's Auction in the south end of Anchorage, and you know, if you aren't on your toes, you miss out, and you can hardly understand what they're saying. And I don't know if it's like the NBA when they're conducting their drafts. I think you get about 5 minutes, you know, per draftee. You know, you can think about what's been done and pick your next one. And I would assume that there's going to be some allowance for movement. And how do you conduct it? Or if you've been to some of these, how are they done?
Mr. Chairman, it would be my proposal, and certainly our intent, that we would be very careful to involve everyone who might have an interest in this process, including the legislature, in drafting regulations as to how we're actually going to conduct that. It would also be my intent to not have any untoward movements of anybody's signal anything. It would be a straight up and up predictable process where body language would play no part. And because I also see it as an opportunity, if it isn't done properly, to invite litigation and appeals and those sorts of things. So we would be very careful to work with everyone and hear everyone's opinion about how to do that with least exposure for doing it wrong.
I probably have already got myself in trouble with BP, but I just want to note for humor that my a neighbor of mine who is certain vice president with ARCO found himself what he thought was purchasing a vacation trip to the Caribbean, and it was actually a vacation trip to Southeast Alaska. And because of certain perhaps untoward movements and a poor sound system and a lot of noise from the surrounding people on the table. So I know that can happen, and it would be disturbing if that happened in one of these auctions.
It would be disturbing for me also.
Have you heard that story? Further comments, Sam Sharp?
Just a couple. Are we off?
I think we're still online now.
Through the chair, Mr. Easton, I guess one of the concerns we keep hearing from those that would like to be in the business but aren't, the direction seems to be going towards bigger and bigger consolidation of the bigger companies. And Alaska doesn't have the opportunity for quote independence. Maybe the, and you've been around a long time on both sides of the arena. In your opinion, do you feel that there is a place for the independent at the current time in Alaska? I mean, other than Cook Inlet, where one was recently successful.
Right. Senator Sharp, and I have a note here reminding that I think I did call you Representative Sharp a moment ago. We've known each other too long, and I apologize. I think that, I was going to cite Bill Stewart as a good example of I hope a good example. I think he's going to prove very successful there in his venture. And that was, as you probably are aware, the first time in my memory that someone has carried a venture of that sort from the lease through the concept of drilling the prospect and actually discovering an oil field. There have been, over the years, a number of individuals that have participated and continue to participate in our competitive leasing program. Including many of your constituents in the Fairbanks area. We have looked at this issue over a number of years because it's one that has been perennial. We've heard over and over that there aren't opportunities to participate and we have been very careful, I think, as I think the record will reflect, to make sure that there are opportunities to competitively lease. But the thing that, of course, we can't control other than by keeping a level playing field so that they aren't disadvantaged beyond getting the getting the initial lease, they certainly aren't disadvantaged, we think, by any of our programs. We can't lead the horse, we've led the horse to water, but we certainly can't make them drink. The record reflects that a number of leases have been taken by small investors and we hope independents. But the follow through to the actual drilling of the wells has been pretty poor. There have been few instances where people have been able to do that for one reason or another. But the standards we've set for competitive leasing, we have fairly low minimum bids in most sales, on the order of $5 or $10 an acre. And we still hear many times that that's an extraordinary high amount of money. But if you'll remember from our earlier discussions, the maximum lease size right now is 5,760 acres. So you're talking about, even though it's big money by your standard and my standard, by someone's standard who is going to explore a lease, it's insignificant. It's an inconsequential amount of money to pay $10 an acre for that sort of lease. And at the same time, we've also offered leases, as I recall, in recent years, as low as $1 to $3 an acre, which provides the opportunity, as the record reflects, for people to buy those leases and to try to form partnerships, if that's what their real interest, to drill. But in many cases, if not most of those cases, what we've seen is that those leases have been turned through assignments into leases where a lot of people buy an interest but don't have the follow-through to actually drill the well. So in my view, the exploration licensing, if it has the proper hurdles to make sure that we get what we're bargaining for, is probably not going to be the sort of thing that most independence in the sense that we think of them in Alaskan terms, generally are going to participate, but we still have that option for competitive leasing, and we still have the option, if they can put together the deal as the broker for the financing, that they can participate.
Thank you. I guess a lot of them point to how successful it was in the lower 48 and the new wealth individually it created. But, and I'm not saying that I disapprove of the way that the wealth was spread up here with the current oil exploration as far as every Alaskan, you know, benefiting from it. I think that's a lot to be said for that, and rather than pyramiding it in a few families or something like that. But it's still is a concept. Let's see, one other thing. You said that BP had...